Good evening and welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Later on Building Bridges, UAW officials sit back while Delphi rank and file workers fight back. But first,
for the second year in a row, Walmart wins, hey, not unexpectedly, Grinch of the Year. The company leads the global race to the bottom, boasting profits and boosting them for their executives on the backs of their employees through low wages, insufficient health care, and discrimination.
Recently, the National Labor Committee discovered a secret Walmart office hidden in New York City at 310 West 31st Street and decided to tell Walmart that we don't want bargains based upon the exploitation of our workers or the exploitation of kids and young people locked in sweatshops all around the developing world.
Now, to a protest at Walmart's secret office.
Walmart for 4 years in the Longjiang factory in China. to see how much they did to improve conditions. They did absolutely nothing. There are 50-year-old girls working in that factory who are underage and they're working illegally. The workers are kept 13 hours a day, 6 and 7 days a week. They're at the factory 78 to 91 hours a week. They're working up to 77 hours a week. They're getting 33 cents an hour. That's Walmart, below the minimum wage of 41 cents, which is already below subsistence levels. We don't like the fact that the workers in China are fired when they get injured on the job because Walmart doesn't give them health insurance, which is also illegal. We don't like the fact that women working in a factory do not receive their maternity leave with benefits, which is also demanded by the law. We don't like the fact that they're forced to work overtime, but then they're cheated of their overtime premiums. We don't like the fact that at 10 o'clock at night, they have to punch out their time cards and start working off the clock. We don't like the fact that women have to paint 2,000 toy cars a day. They have to paint 250 cars every hour. They have to paint one car every 14 seconds. We don't like the fact that the workers in China are getting paid just 18 cents to make these cars that sell at Walmart for $64.97. The wages come to 0.3% of the retail price. We don't like the fact that the workers have no paid leave, no holidays, no paid leave to get married, no paid leave to bury their dead family members. We don't like it. So I think it's very important we're here today and deliver a strong message to Walmart. We don't want their union busting. We don't want their miserable benefits. We don't want them destroying our communities. We don't want to work for $9 an hour. We want to work with our heads up. We want to work with our backs straight. We want to work with decent wages and benefits. And we're sick of Walmart's union-busting policies. And Walmart, you'll never come into New York. Never. And here's Li Shang to say one or two words about the factory in China.
All right.
And Christine's going to translate.
Walmart 在中国制造机器, 中国的工程当成机器一样。
In China, Walmart treats its workers like machines.
中国的工人每天工作十三个小时, 在Walmart的工厂。
They work 13 hours a day.
大概20美分一个小时。
Every hour they earn 14, 15 cents.
十几个工人住在一个很小的房间。
You have over 10 workers living in a small dormitory together.
这些在Walmart在中国的工厂是很普遍的这种情况。
This kind of situation in China is actually very normal, especially in Walmart factories.
这也是沃尔玛的产品为什么在中国制造的原因。
So you ask, why does Walmart go to China?
它在中国也制造中国工人的贫穷。
Because Chinese workers are poor and they want to exploit their poverty.
中国的工人在沃尔玛的工厂仅仅维持他们的生活。
These workers can barely stay alive with the work wages that they make in these Walmart factories.
没有医疗保险。
They don't have any medical insurance.
他们根本不能够维持他们的家庭。
They can't keep a family together on these wages.
通过他们通过这些让这些工厂成为他们在中国的，就是把中国的工人变成他们为他们生产的这种机器。
They're turning these workers into machines that do nothing but produce for Walmart and can't barely stay alive.
Walmart 必须作为一个有责任的公司，应该改变这些现状。
Walmart should become a responsible company and take responsibility for these workers.
他应该公开他在中国的工厂。
They need to open their factories and tell us where they are and open them to China Labor Watch to go in and do investigations.
让其他的劳动组织去检查。
They should open all their factories to all independent investigations.
能够让他的工厂能够透明，能够有一个让这些工厂的工人能够得到一个生活的工资。
They need to start paying living wages for their workers.
这是沃尔玛，他在中国不断的追求廉价。
These workers are paying the price for your everyday low prices.
所以，美国的工人应该和中国的消费者应该更多来关注这种情况。
American consumers need to take responsibility also for the low prices that they pay.
沃尔玛它不应该秘密的在美，那如果说它的情况能够改变的话，沃尔玛不应该在纽约来秘密的开它的办公室，应该公开的来。
They should open their factories and they should open their office in New York.
应该有加盟，但是我觉得他来这里开秘密的办公室是他的耻辱。他这么富有，他非常富有，但是他来这里秘密的开在纽约来开他的办公室，我觉得他是耻辱。
The richest company in the world is hiding out in New York. It's ridiculous.
OK， 谢谢大家。
Thank you.
Yes， 快点。
And, well, Li Sheng told us that the workers have a union there in the factory, Longchang. You know what the job of the union is? They organize dance parties on the weekend. For the office staff, the workers don't go. This is the union they have, a company union. This is the kind of union that Walmart likes. We all have dance parties on Friday night. Well, like Li Sheng said, Walmart has 4,400 factories in one province in China alone, in Guangdong. They refuse to give the American people even the names and addresses of the factories they use. Why? Because they're hiding. They want to hide these factories. It's easier to exploit young girls who are locked behind barbed wire in hidden factories. So we're telling Walmart, come out! What do you have to be afraid of? Come on out! Give the American people the names and addresses of your factories. If you're proud of your factories, if you're proud of your code of conduct, if you're proud of your wages, give the American people just the names and addresses of the factories that make the goods you want us to buy. Stop hiding these sweatshops. And us is great. Just give our message loud and clear to Walmart and just keep this up until they get the message. Even Scrooge changed. Even Scrooge became a human being. So there's hope for Walmart. There's hope for the Walton family that's worth $80 billion. There's some hope for Lee Scott, who pays himself $335,000 a week, which is 54,000 times more than he pays the workers in Bangladesh. Walmart had a $10 billion profit last year, but they don't have enough to pay the workers in China, or the workers in the United States, or the workers in Bangladesh. There's something sick with this model. Walmart wants to lead us into the race to the bottom. They want us to be pitted against workers all over the world, and we'll fight each other for who can have the lowest wages and the least benefits and the most miserable living and working conditions just for the honor of having a job. This is what Walmart's future is, and we don't want it. Let's give them a piece of our mind.
Hey, hey! Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, hey! Whoa, whoa! Walmart sweatshops got to go! Hey, hey! Whoa, whoa! Walmart sweatshops got to go!
When I say Walmart, you say no! Walmart!
No!
Gotta go! Gotta go!
Greg Shotwell joins us now from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Greg is the co-founder of Soldiers of Solidarity. Recently, auto workers were hit with a 1-2 punch. A bankrupt auto parts Delphi disclosed its latest wage proposals, which would put its lowest paid workers' wages slightly above Walmart's average, while General Motors proposed shutting down plants and cutting 30,000 jobs between 2007 and 8. The more drastic plan came at Delphi. It wants to fire 18,000 of its 28,000 U.S. workers and cut wages absolutely down to, for the rest, $10.50 an hour and $12.50 an hour, less than half of a Delphi worker's present average pay. Well, Greg Shotwell, why were the Soldiers of Solidarity formed? I know that Delphi has 34,000 active employees and 24,000 are UAW members. What was the need for this organization?
First, I'd like to express my admiration and respect for the transit workers. They've really been an inspiration to us. Any social system that degrades workers and deprives people of health care and threatens the security of the elderly is a decadent system, and a union that supports that system, I think, is self-destructive. The transit workers showed a lot of courage to defy the law and the dictates of their international, to go out on strike to support the next generation. This two-tier system where we force new hires to accept sacrifices that older workers aren't willing to take themselves is discrimination against a whole generation. And I expect this is what's coming down the pike for UAW members. You know, in the UAW, we have a pattern of accepting the two-tier wage, and it's repugnant to active unionists. One of the reasons Soldiers of Solidarity formed is after the declared bankruptcy at Delphi, and the proposal to wipe out our pensions, take away most of our health care, or increase premiums and cut wages by more than half, we didn't hear anything from the international UAW. There was just silence. So So we needed to bond together to decide for ourselves how are we going to react to this situation. Initially, when I started this rank-and-file meetings, I just expected there would be some Delphi workers, but the interest has been broad. We're getting people from all sectors of the auto industry who are concerned because they see Delphi as a trend, they see bankruptcy as a trend, and they recognize that whatever happens at Delphi is coming their way.
Delphi makes auto parts for General Motors and other companies and supplies car parts around the world. How many workers are affected by the company filing bankruptcy, and what are the implications for the workforce there?
Well, there's 34,000 in the United States active workers, and that includes the UAW, also electrical communication workers, steel workers, other unions. And they're retirees, so it's probably 40 to 50,000 who are affected directly in the United States. But like I say, it's just the first domino, because everybody that in the supply industry recognizes that it's going to affect them. In Grand Rapids, for instance, there's suppliers to our Delphi plant who make comparable wages, and they know that they're next.
Mm. Now, Delphi say it's not profitable.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the response? Does it have anything to do with their investments abroad?
Well, this is a trend in the United States, and not only workers need to be alarmed about, but investors, because they're not really bankrupt in the normal sense of the word. They're simply reorganizing. It's not that they don't have money. They are paying their bills. J.P. Morgan wanted to loan them an extra $2 billion to buy Motorola. So apparently they're considered financially viable. Their assets overseas, they claim, are highly profitable. The only thing they want to do is dump the pensions and health care responsibilities for retirees onto the taxpayers and slash the wages. And that's what I mean when I say degrade workers and mm-hmm. threaten the security of the elderly. So it's not that they don't have the money, but they have transferred their assets overseas. They took the profits that we generated and invested overseas while de-investing in the United States. So they kind of rigged the game to make us look highly unprofitable here.
Of course, there's so many Chapter 11s now, which are those reorganization plans, which, as you said, really aren't about money. They're about abrogation of union contracts. They're about attacking the pension fund. They're about attacking the health co-pays, et cetera. It's a real mechanism for disciplining and strangling the organized workforce.
Exactly. This is about breaking contracts, not just contracts with the union, but the social contract that we have come to accept in the United States, that if you worked for a company for 25, 30 years or more, that you would have a pension and that you would have health care. You know, our system of government depends on employers providing health care. Well, they're bailing out of that system, and there's no social network to fall back on to replace it. Yeah, recently in Michigan, a small Pistons ring plant in Hastings, they went through this reorganization. Now they're paying their workers the exact same amount that they paid before. They're producing the exact same amount of product. All they did was dump the pension and health care responsibilities for retirees onto the taxpayers. This is a social welfare for corporations.
Now, Steve Miller, who is the company's CEO, recently said that he would negotiate with the United Auto Workers and delay submitting a reorganization plan to the bankruptcy court for about 6 months. Rope-a-dope or victory?
Well, we think it's rope-a-dope. And this isn't speculation on our part. We're looking at Miller's history. You know, he has a pattern of bankruptcy and breaking contracts. He does not show any pattern of negotiation. So we don't really take that seriously, and we're preparing for a confrontation.
As a matter of fact, didn't Mr. Miller compare workers, which I just find so onerous, to lawnmowers?
Yeah, he was indicating
Yuck.
That we were highly unskilled workers who were getting paid more than we are worth. And, you know, I shouldn't complain about that, because I often say that corporate America is run by overpaid, incompetent frauds. So maybe it was my turn to be ridiculed. But this is his attitude towards us, that we are unskilled and overpaid, and it's time that we were, brought down to size.
So I'm mad as hell and don't want to take it anymore, and I know you folks must be, and there's something coming up on January 8th with the International Auto Show, and I found this interesting piece that said, keep the picket signs away from the Detroit Auto Show.
Yeah, that was the Detroit News. And, you know, the auto show is very big in Detroit. It's an important event for them, and they're naturally a little defensive. But we will be there on January 8th, and we're going to picket the auto show. And the Detroit police called me the other day.
That's very considerate.
Yes, and they said they expected 3,000 to 5,000 people. And I said, well, that would be my best-case scenario and your worst-case, but I think we'll get along.
They're watching the store, huh?
They are. And, you know, we intend to be orderly and respectful. We don't want to treat the general public as if they were scabs, but we want to send a signal that we're not going to roll over. And just because Miller said that he's going to push back his reorganization plan, that doesn't mean we're going to let up the pressure. We're going to continue to picket at the auto show. We also are scheduling more rank-and-file meetings. We're going to be in Lockport, New York on January 8th, and Milwaukee, Wisconsin on January 15th. On January 22nd, we're going to be in Troy, Michigan, which is the headquarters of Delphi, and we're going to have most of our meetings are open to the public, not to the corporate media, but to any workers who are interested. But on January 22nd, we're going to have a meeting that is restricted to active Delphi workers so we can get down to the brass tacks of preparing for strike actions. And then January 23rd, we want to picket Delphi's headquarters and demand our legal right to examine the annual audit of the pension report. So we'll see if we can get inside the headquarters with our muddy boots.
Wipe those feet before you get in. We don't want to scuff those marble floors, those banks that are made of marble. Going back to Lockport, New York, our neck of the woods, in a manner of speaking, what's happening up there?
Well, we have two Delphi plants in that area. There's one in Rochester and one in Lockport, which are important plants, and there's quite a few Delphi workers there, probably between the two, 4,000. Plus a few General Motors plants, and we've gotten messages from Canadian auto workers nearby that would like to come, too. So we expect a good draw. But there's a little bit of a conflict there because we're meeting with them on the same day we're picketing the auto show. But it's really, some event, public event like that is a good show of solidarity, and it can be mobilizing. Really, the important work is organizing at the point of production, because it's production that's going to have the strongest influence on GM and Delphi.
And I think ultimately the strongest influence on really changing the power paradigms in this country. When you control, those means of production, it's got a lot to do with what our society looks like. I assume, by the way, that the founding of the Soldiers of Solidarity means that the international union has been less than satisfactory in responding to these catastrophic events in the auto industry. I mean, here's auto, where people who were from some of the lowest economic strata had finally an opportunity to graduate, so to speak, into a more middle-class reality, and now are about to be thrust into very possible destitution.
Yes, it would be destitution. And, you know, when the bankruptcy was announced, the international was really silent. You know, I really expected to see regional directors come into our plant and just walk the floor and say, look, we're going to fight this. But we heard nothing. And we recognized that, you know, we're going to have to organize ourselves. The other thing is that in 2003, the international union did negotiate a two-tier wage scale, which, by the way, at my plant, we rejected soundly by a 2-to-1 margin. But General Motors workers voted along with Delphi. They voted as if it was one contract, and it passed. Now we expect that General Motors workers should support us. If we pass that contract together in 2003, then they should support us in 2005 and strike with us. But this two-tier that UAW International negotiated pays $14 an hour. There would be no COLA on pension, not pension, no COLA, a cost of living adjustment for 4 years. And they wouldn't have any defined pension. They would make increased premium pays on their health insurance. They would not have health insurance for the first year. Now, any union that would impose those kinds of sacrifices on the next generation of workers is decadent. I mean, how can anyone, you know, live on $14 an hour and on top of that be expected to contribute to their 401k in order to get matching funds for some kind of pension? It's just unconscionable. Now, I don't know how they can go before a bankruptcy judge and argue that we deserve more when they've already decided that that's what's competitive.
Well, I think we've learned a lot from the strike of transport workers, Union Local 100. There needs to be a finger on the pulse of the working class. That's terminology that we need to use more, and we need to do that kind of workplace organizing and pay attention and build those bridges with the community sectors to support the workers' movement so that we can really begin to think of what creates fundamental structural change in this society. And as we brace ourselves for a strike at Delphi and General Motors, Greg Shotwell, we really thank you for your organizing. Do the Soldiers of Solidarity have a website yet?
Yes, you can check Future of the Union. That's one website. There's also one called soldiersofsolidarity.tripod.com. I have a website called gregshotwell.net. But, you know, when you say about building these bridges, if everybody in New York had refused to go to work, that strike would have been over with in one day.
No question about it. While other people were giving alternative information for people to accomplish getting to work, I would say, no, don't do that. We should stay out and support the workers.
You know, a couple years ago, I was in Italy, and there was a transport strike.
Oh, yeah.
And the tour guide explained to us that, you know, I understand in the United States there'd be huge traffic jams if there was a transport strike. But in Italy, everybody just stays home from work. And in fact, since they called the strike on Tuesday, most people made it a long weekend.
As well they should have. And listen, we thank you very much for your efforts. And we've been speaking with Greg Shotwell from Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's co-founder of Soldiers of Solidarity. Stay strong, and we do support our sister and brother auto workers. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you.
And this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And you can reach us at knash@igc.org. That's knash@igc.org.